I think we need one more member for a quorum, so we'll go ahead and get started with the testimony at hand. I think, first of all, before we start with that, we're going to, I'll introduce Bob Eliff. Bob is from House Research, and I believe it's Mr. Bull that is former position.
Right.
And welcome to the legislature.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And the, we now have, we now have a quorum there. Okay. We'll move the minutes. Has anyone had a chance to take a look at them? Representative Lindgren moves the approval of the minutes of February 3rd and February 4th. Okay. Any additions or corrections to minutes? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Okay, we will have start off this morning with the Office of Environmental Assistance. Mr. Benke.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Benke. I'm the Strategic Directions Manager for the Office of Environmental Assistance. I want to thank you for the opportunity this morning to present the OEA's capital assistance request. Before I get into the presentation, I want to walk you through the documents we've provided to you. There are three documents for your reference. The first is the capital budget itself and the information contained in your three-ring binders. I've also handed out a fact sheet about the program that contains information historically as well as all of the projects that we have funded. And I've also provided to you today a outline of our PowerPoint presentation that I'll be using to go through so you can follow along with that. To begin with, I want to summarize what the capital assistance recommendation is from the governor's office. The governor's office has recommended $4 million for the program. We have based our request off of a competitive review of four projects, which I'll talk about a little more in a moment. The requests of those four projects are a little over $22,400,000 in grant requests. The CAP grant awards would be scheduled if we receive an appropriation for the early part of July 2004. So this funding would get into those projects and get those moving right away. The purpose of the CAP grant program really is to assist local units of government, to assist the cities and the counties that we work with to implement solid waste management programs in the state to actually get resources recovered from the waste. The capital assistance program builds material and energy recovery capacity and has done so throughout the state, as you can see by the project list in your packet. It's also been a real catalyst for regional cooperation. Many of these projects cannot be done as a single county, and as you'll see as we look at the projects today, they are multi-county projects. It's also achieved the environmental goals set out in the Waste Management Act of matching the waste itself to the best technology to manage it, recyclables being recycled, energy recovered, and problem materials and hazardous waste removed from the waste stream. It also has an effect of expanding local economies in terms of jobs. We've presented in the past the impact of the recycling industry in the state in terms of its economic impact in jobs and in goods and services. And these waste energy facilities and other materials recovery facilities do the same thing. We also incorporate, as I mentioned, the waste management hierarchy, the regional cooperation, but these projects are built on local solid waste management plans. They're built from the local counties in development of those plans and how they want to manage their waste and the goals set out in the state statutes. We also take a look at these projects for their technical and financial feasibility. make sure that what is being proposed is actually capable of doing what it needs to do and doing it under the financial constraints that are proposed. And last, we take a look at the timetable for the development of these projects, making sure that it fits with the permitting schedules and other development for the project, and so that the funding that's provided can be utilized in a timely fashion. I'm going to summarize the proposed projects. In terms of dollar amount that's being requested, I mentioned it was $22 million total. Olmsted County has requested $4 million for their project. There's $2 million requested from the City of Red Wing, $1.45 million from Hennepin County, and Redwood County and Malta County project in the Southwest is requesting $15 million. Those are the projects that we have received. We had a request for projects due in September of 2003 preparing for this request. Total, as I said, is $22,466,000, and that is the request that we've received. If all these projects were to go, the results of the proposed projects would be over the next 2 to 3 years during the development of the facilities, we'd have about 160 construction jobs created. This is what we've looked at comparison to other projects that we've done. Afterwards, once in place, there would be approximately 20 or 30 permanent jobs that would be created. Importantly for us, from a recovery standpoint, we would get 11 megawatts of new waste energy output to be utilized by the local economy in economic development activities, linking new business opportunities with that energy. It would mean about $5.7 million per year in additional energy and materials recovery, the recyclables recovery and the sales of the energy, about $136 million over the life of the projects, which we estimate to be about 20 years. Other results would be that three of these projects would be expanding and that we would get one new project serving approximately 17 counties. We would have 580 tons per day of new capacity to convert waste energy and recyclables, and that would represent assistance to about 28 counties total for all the projects. We would significantly reduce the land disposal of waste, recovering it in terms of energy and recyclables. That would be about 3.5 million tons of waste that would be recovered over the course of the 20 years of the project. In comparison, we take a look at the closed landfill cleanup program. There's approximately 40 million tons of waste in those facilities. These facilities that we've provided cap grants to over the past 10, 15 years have provided more capacity and processed more waste that is in those programs. So you can see that this investment takes care of problems for the future as well. The projects themselves have all completed an initial cap grant application. As I mentioned, we invited those applications to come in by September of 2003. All four projects are deemed eligible according to the statute and rules. And if appropriated funds were to come to the OEA, we would then take the process of asking for final application and going through the final application review process prior to award. And that's where more of the technical and financial feasibility would come in to make sure the projects were indeed ready to go and would accomplish what we had intended. I'll go through the individual projects here. Olmsted County has requested a cap grant of $4 million. This would be the expansion of an existing waste-to-energy facility, adding a third line. Olmsted and Dodge counties, who are part of this project, have experienced considerable growth in that area in terms of population and have seeing that the waste has continued to rise. This third line would get them back to their goal of reducing the amount of waste being landfilled and get them up to a 90% recovery rate. And the total capital cost for the project is $38 million, and you can see that the grant is a proportion of that. I mentioned the goal of 90% recovery. This would get them back to that. They have seen an increase in land disposal and the consumption of that space at their facility. The other aspect of this project would create an additional 5 megawatts of energy on an annual basis, and I think as we look at a couple slides down the road, we'll see what that means to the county. It also protects groundwater in a sensitive geologic area where they have karst geography, and this would help continue to protect that. It also expand the district's heating and cooling system, and I'll show you a slide of that in a moment. These are the two counties that we're talking about, Dodge and Olmsted in the southeast. I think many of you have had a chance to see the facility. This is a picture from the outside, obviously taken before our recent snowfall. But it does show the facility and its setting in operation. It's located next to the federal prison in Rochester, the old state hospital campus. The facility has created a system for heating and cooling, which takes the steam from the facility and runs it to over 20 different buildings throughout the area in Rochester, all the way up 4th Street to their new government center, public library, and the civic center, as well as the federal prison, the local county hospital, and the county campus there. So the connection there and an additional use of steam for heating and cooling is very valuable to the local area and will be utilized as a resource there.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chairman, could we just have a short explanation of karst? Looks like a Russian word to me that I don't understand.
Karst? Mr. Chairman, I think the best way to explain karst is that it's very porous in terms of the surface soils, and there's actually access to the groundwater in real easy ways. In southeast Minnesota, you drive around and you can see sinkholes in other areas where the limestone has eroded through water movement, and there's direct lines, so to speak, to that groundwater. And so if anything occurs on the surface, there's a potential there to infiltrate the water supplies of the communities there. There isn't a layer of clay or some other protective membrane over the top of that water like you might see in other areas of the state.
Mr. Chairman, it's often easier to explain it and saying what it isn't. It isn't what the glacial overlay covered. The glacier stopped, and that gave us the karst region.
Mr. Chairman, continuing on, the City of Red Wing has applied with us to link a waste-to-energy facility that currently exists with an upfront sorting system. We've done some of these sorting systems elsewhere in the state, in Polk County and in Polk Douglas, where we've taken and applied materials recovery in front of the waste-energy facility and have been able to take out some of the problem materials, some of the objectionable materials, and recover recyclables. The total cost of this project is about $4 million. In addition to removing toxic items, it improves the air quality in a couple ways. Some of the materials that are recovered for recycling, some of the metal-bearing objects, aren't your normal on-the-curb kind of things that you think about. We consider cans and bottles and that sort of thing when we throw things out on the curb. But what the facilities receive are everything from grocery carts to frying pans, U-joints, and those kinds of things. Recoverable in the sense that the metal's probably recyclable, but not something we'd normally think of. These materials end up in these waste energy facilities and end up in the grates and in the system and can cause considerable problems. So the removal of those, recover the recyclables as well as increase the efficiencies of the facility. The other materials that are recovered include some of the paper and cardboard that's easily accessible up front. This expands the useful life of those waste energy facilities considerably. The boiler maintenance costs and the ash and impact on those boilers from those materials has shown to be a real benefit in addition to the recovering of the recyclables. This realizes the operational, economic, and environmental benefits of the system through this pre-sort operation.
Can you tell me what type of recycling programs that the City of Red Wing has in place for the residents?
Sure. That's another thing that we've seen with these other facilities. This doesn't take away from the current recycling program. In fact, the City of Red Wing has an extensive collection program, including curbside, as well as local drop-off programs, as well as a recycling center. So that's being optimized already. This is the stuff that's still in the waste stream, and as I mentioned, it may not be our traditional recyclables. Some of those can be recovered in terms of aluminum that's left in there and cardboard, but it's those other metal-bearing waste that cause problems in terms of emissions and operation that can come out of there. Red Wing does have in the City of Red Wing, city-run program, and then the county works throughout the rest of the county on the collection. Also included is the City of Lake City, which straddles both Wabasha and Goodhue counties, and is included in this service area. So it's partially Wabasha County and Goodhue County.
About the maintenance costs that will be saved by this type of investments, has that been calculated out so we can get an idea as to what if this is the most cost-effective way of handling it, and what type of, you're saying it's reducing toxic items. I'm wondering if we could get a little more breakdown on.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to provide that. I don't have that with me today, but the facilities that we've utilized this with, Polk County and Polk Douglas, have that information. I can provide that to you. In fact, on the this is a quick picture of the City of Red Wing's facility, but these top slides do come from the Polk County facility in Boston. And you can see from this the way the materials are recovered through trommel screens, through hand sorting, and through some air separation. On the top right, you can see the baled aluminum that's still recovered out of the waste stream, even after extensive curbside and collection programs. And then the bottom right, you see that pile of metal that you don't see a lot of steel cans there, but you see a lot of metal. In fact, I think there's even a frying pan on this slide.
I assume this is just going to be a smaller version of what we have in Newport?
Mr. Chairman,
Excel has in Newport?
These facilities are managing smaller amounts of waste, and so they are sized accordingly. So you could look at it that way. There are some additional pieces of equipment that they have in Newport that they wouldn't have at these facilities. Some of the removal of some of the materials for Newport is a little bit different in terms of what they want to do with the waste and the end combustion of it. You got to remember, these are up front of mass burn facilities, so it's not necessary to get everything out, but the problem-causing materials are what they're targeting here. So,
are members familiar with the refuse dry fuel facility in Newport and how that operates, or the difference in it? Maybe you go over just briefly the difference in the types of facilities that we have, like the PERC facility in Hennepin County versus a Newport type facility, which is refuse dry fuel.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. My kids always kid me about talking trash all the time, and sometimes I get ahead of myself and not recognizing the level that everyone's at. We have basically two types of waste to energy technology in this state. We have mass burn technology, which takes waste from the curb and runs it through the facility without doing anything mechanically to it. We also have what's called refuse-derived fuel, and that is where we take up front of the burn facility some mechanical means to separate the waste. And in the picture here, you can see some of that type of equipment with the trommel screens and the air separation and the pre-sorting by hand. And that takes the waste and gets into what's called refuse-derived fuel, which is actually a cleaned-up version of the waste where the recyclables are removed. It's been pre-classified to a certain size depending on the facility, and then it's utilized as a fuel, oftentimes called fluff, because it's generally the lighter fraction, the paper and the combustible component. But that's kind of the types of facilities that we have. What we have noticed with the mass burn facilities, particularly some of the smaller ones, is that there is a big advantage on getting some of those objectionable materials out. I had the chance to crawl through one of the boilers up in Polk County with the, one of the facility operators once, and he showed me where the small pieces of metal, the U-joints and so forth, would lodge in the grate system, and then they'd have to shut the thing down, climb in, take it out, in addition to some of the generation of some of the pollutants that we're worried about in terms of creating emissions. So there's a dual benefit there as they pre-sort it, and I think that's one of the things we've learned. Adding these facilities up front, I'll get you the information on the economics of it after we're finished here today.
The Olmsted County facility would be a mass burn facility?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Olmsted County is a mass burn facility, and so is Red Wing. The proposed facility for Redwood County, I'll show you in a moment. But what they're proposing here in Redwood is to kind of make it more into a refuse dry fuel facility where they're able to take up front out of the waste stream after the recycling programs.
Bring to Red Wing?
Yes.
Okay.
After the recycling programs, what's left in the waste stream. Switching gears a little bit away from waste energy facility.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Behnke, in our trash that we put on the curb, how much, do you have a rough idea, and if you don't have it here, if you could provide it to us, how much goes direct to a landfill and how much goes to the two different kinds of facilities you talked about in the state of Minnesota?
A rough estimate for that, Mr. Chairman, is that about 75% of our waste goes to locations other than landfilling when looking at it statewide. 50% of that goes to recycling, and then the other 25% goes through a combination of the waste energy facilities and composting facilities. A smaller fraction of that is managed as problem materials, which aren't necessarily recycled, but they're managed in a way other than the landfilling or the waste energy. That includes the household hazardous waste programs and some of the tire recovery and so forth.
Senator Genius.
Thank you. Now that you brought up household hazardous waste as a way of cleaning up the waste stream before it gets burned, tell us how we're doing in removing household hazardous waste.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, we have taken a look at the opportunities that are out there for these facilities and the numbers of participants across the state. We've got opportunities for almost every resident in the state to participate. The volumes and the materials that we're recovering, we have seen continue to grow, and the participation continue to grow. We don't really have a comparison, I think, if we're looking at from one state to another how much is coming out. We do have quantities and volumes of the different materials that have been collected, and our programs, I think, are hitting the goals that have been set out by the counties for the volumes that they want to get out and the targeted material. And it depends a little bit different on the type of disposal at the end. Some of the facilities that have experienced problems with, say, lead or other materials may target specifically materials to recover. Like Hennepin County has really targeted some of the electronics because of, you know, the impact it has on the waste energy facilities. That isn't connected directly to the HHW, but it is the whole problem materials category.
Representative Guinea?
It would be how, I wasn't looking for comparison state to state. I was looking to compare ourselves to where we've been. Could you just bring us those numbers the next time you come in? I mean, how we're going both in household hazardous waste and in problem materials.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to do that. I think in connection with that, I think we could bring in, you know, we've got our recent reports in terms of our score and so forth. Progress, and I think we need to, you know, put those in connection because it's not a separate system. It's a system that's integrated, and getting the problem materials and the household hazardous waste out is one component, but getting the resources recovered in terms of energy or recyclables, I think, helps, you know, look at the whole system together.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Are there any interesting programs in other states that we ought to be looking at, like, for example, for one of the problem materials is computer components and those kinds of parts. Has anyone done requirements to the manufacturer, for example, for recycling and taking back and so forth?
Mr. Chairman, some of the efforts that the office has been involved in terms of manufacturer responsibilities included the electronics area, and we have kept in contact with other states and what they're doing. We've promoted, you know, work on the national level to try and get some solutions to some of these individual problems. As they come home to the state in terms of impacts, we've also dealt with those. We're currently involved with an Upper Midwest States group of state solid waste managers and bouncing ideas back and forth with them on different materials. One of our problems, you know, in the past has been waste tires. It travels throughout the Midwest, and sometimes when we manage something, it just moves to another location and becomes another problem. So it's real important that we keep in contact over those. But as we do look at any programs in the state, we always look across the country first to see what other states might be doing and how we can emulate that or learn from problems that they've had.
I guess I asked, has any state specifically done the requirements on that on their purchasing? For example, like certainly the thing they have most control over is state purchasing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, we do in this state work with the Department of Admin quite extensively on our purchases, everything from recycled content paper to the management of our electronics after their use, and are trying to make those contracts available to our local units of government. One of the things that we've tried to do with that purchasing is to send a signal. Our first effort with that is to basically get information in, and that is ask whoever's responding to the bids to provide us with a list of what's in their products. After that, we've provided preferences and finally specifications for different products, sending that market signal over time to the manufacturer saying, if you can produce us something with recycled content paper, with no mercury switches, those kinds of things, that's going to be the direction that we're going. And we've had good success in doing that. But in terms of specifically, you know, the product stewardship efforts, the manufacturer responsibility, on a national level, we've worked with the carpet industry and a signed agreement on the carpet industry to move their materials from a disposal to a more recycling handling end has been successful. We've worked in the areas of paint, and as you mentioned, the area of electronics as well. So those are continuing efforts, and sometimes you can't solve them all in Minnesota. You do need work either regionally or on a national level for some of the solutions to these. But there are efforts, and they're continuing. We do have a long list, I think, of materials out there that have concerns that we need to continually work at.
Okay, let me, Mr. Chairman, let me try the question one more time. Has any state done an individual, more specific responsibility program? And would you be aware of it if they have?
There are some, and the state of Maine and the state of California have done things with electronics. The other part of your question in terms of the involvement of manufacturers and the level of those vary a little bit. And so if it's a true product stewardship model where there's responsibility across the board, I'm not sure that we have one of those models to look at in the country that has 100% responsibility allocated amongst everyone. I think they're closer than strictly disposal systems where the manufacturers don't have any responsibility. But we're continuing to look at those as we, you know, face the same problems. But I think electronics, you could look there in Maine and in California. Every program has, I think, some of its challenges. And so, like I said, if we see programs that we want to emulate, we'll also look at them for the problems and barriers that they've run into.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going deep into my memory now, but it seems to me that this state has a product stewardship program for NiCad batteries where the manufacturers are required to have programs that will get out at least 90%. How are you monitoring what they are doing? Are they at the 90% rate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I'm not aware exactly what percentage they're at. We can take a look at that. But I think that you bring up a good point. That has been a real successful effort in terms of bringing in both the manufacturers, the retailers, and getting some of these materials out of the waste stream. I could report back on that as well in terms of the percentage and where we're at.
Well, if my memory serves, the manufacturer is responsible for telling you every year what percentage, and they were on a track to get achieve 90%, and they should be at 90% now, and that's your responsibility to make sure that they are.
I'd like to continue with your presentation.
Mr. Chairman, shifting gears a little bit, we'll move to the Hennepin County facility. And although this isn't directly connected in terms of physical location to the waste energy facility in Hennepin County, it is connected in terms of the integration of the system and the providing of services. The Hennepin County project would be the expansion of their household hazardous waste, recyclable drop-off for citizens and for businesses. The total capital cost is $2,900,000, and the county has requested a grant for $1.4 million. This would be an expansion of the household hazardous waste and recycling drop-off. One of the things that the county has experienced is increased participation and growth and use of that facility. It's not just Hennepin County. The six counties in the metro area that participate in the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board have created reciprocal agreements where any county resident within those six counties can use any of the other facilities. And so if I have a household hazardous waste load and I'm heading in from Washington County into Ramsey County and the facility in Ramsey is closer, I can utilize that. So they've seen traffic come from all six counties into each and every one of their facilities. One of the things that has occurred, though, with this facility is that the private side of the industry side and the public citizen drop-off being located in the same place has increased amounts of citizens are using it, some safety issues for the users, which I'll show you in the next slide. They've received, used by over 50,000 users annually, and that continues to grow. So, as I mentioned, the six counties who participate are all utilizing these facilities. But if you look at this facility, this is where I think some of the issues arise, in that they have truck-scaled traffic commingling with citizen drop-off traffic, and that's one of the things that they propose to fix with this project expansion, as well as the facilities and their availability for the drop-off of the various materials. In Hennepin County, the availability for drop-off from everything from appliances and TVs to recyclables and household hazardous waste exists for the citizens as well as the other metro counties at facilities like these. And so they're a good way to get materials in out of the waste stream, but off the curbs and out of the back yards as well. The last project is a new waste standard.
Continue. The way the map shows it, that there are several counties that are participating in this facility.
Yeah, six counties in the metro area are participating through the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board as part of their reciprocal agreements, where they can utilize any one of the facilities as a citizen of the metro area. So if I live in Washington County and I'm going to be running into St. Paul, and the facility for drop-off is in Ramsey County, and it's closest on my route, I can utilize that. And as you get into the border situations, you may have one much closer to you in a neighboring county and want to utilize that. And they've realized that right out of the start with these facilities, that they were getting them from all the different counties in terms of residential drop-off, and agreed to that in terms of their agreement. This last project is a multi-county project in the Southwest. It's a proposed waste energy facility integrating the upfront recycling capacity that we talked about in the Red Wing project. It would have a capital cost of the total project for approximately $37 million. Recovery capacity for between 9 and 17 counties, and as I'll show you the county map in a moment, and we'll talk about those. It would also, and one of the benefits of these waste energy facilities is the extension of the life of the solid waste landfills in the state, utilizing the waste as energy as opposed to putting it in the land, preserve some of that space, doesn't eliminate the need for it. The need for bypassing residuals and ash still occurs from these facilities, so they'd be used but probably at a much slower rate, as well as we've talked about with Redwin, the recovery of recyclables and the removal of toxic materials from the waste stream. This has been a real catalyst for multi-county regional cooperation. The Southwest Solid Waste Regional Development Commission down there has worked hard at looking at alternatives and looking at ways that they can work together. These counties are sometimes more rural in nature, as you're probably aware. Their population densities and waste generations are different as you go from county to county, and their ability to create facilities to utilize on their own is difficult. The other component with this would be bring 6 megawatts of energy for production, new energy that would be available for economic development and linking to other manufacturing or other businesses. This map shows the location of the proposed facility in Lamberton, which is in Redwood County. The counties that are highlighted in the dark green are those who are currently participating in fully, and those in the light green are a little bit more, they're still participating but haven't made the same commitments. But you can see there's upwards of 17 counties that could be part of this facility. This is just a design schematic that was what the facility would look like, but also shows you both the burn capacity itself and the materials recovery component in a artistic rendered drawing. Not one I did, though, mind you. At this time, I'd like to thank you for your attention, and if you have any questions or comments, I'd be happy to try and answer those now.
Okay, Representative Hoppe?
Third grader.
Representative Kahn?
No, the third grader. I yield to him.
First of all, she was being unkind to third graders when she said that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question, and I'm trying to think in my memory, but are there private companies that do this? The garbage people that are picking up our regular garbage, do they have programs where the state requires them to take as much as they can out of the waste stream for recycling and cleaning it up before it goes to burners or landfills, or is this strictly private strictly public?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hoppe, the state statute puts the responsibility for solid waste programs on the county, and it's their responsibility to provide for the recycling, for the waste energy, and so forth. It doesn't mean that we don't have partnerships that include industry. In fact, the Newport facility is a good example. That's privately owned, but it's working with the counties. As well as the burn capacity that's then associated with that facility through XL Energy and their facilities in Red Wing and in Mankato. So those are the connections, but the state statute does put it on the local units of government, in this case the counties, to provide for those services.
Any other questions? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Banky, I noticed your and the projects that you've talked to us about come up to $22 million, and the governor's recommendation is for $4 million. What does that mean? Does we just go down the list and just do Olmsted County?
Mr. Chairman,
are you allowed to ask for things that the governor hasn't said you can?
Mr. Chairman, in the governor's narrative and request, His recommendation of $4 million is based off of those four projects. We provided to him in the process the information that we thought what, you know, projects were there. One of the things that we've had to do in the past, in understanding that the resources are limited, is prioritize as well. That's part of the reason for the final application process, to make sure a couple things are there, that the financial technical feasibility is with these projects, but also to make sure that the timing, that the development aspects haven't changed. I think one of the reasons to get into the request as well is to get on the radar screen for us, understanding that with a big project like the Southwest project, you know, we start looking at 17 counties to help make decisions and provide input and commitment, and it gets difficult to create some of that. And so there may be schedules that are here that you know, they may not be exactly on this same time schedule, but that's the current need in terms of what was represented to us in the project. The next phase of final application, understanding what resources that we have after the legislative session is completed, will help us. We'll go back to the projects as well and let them know what we have available and what they may or may not be able to continue the project with the recommendation that we might provide to them.
Well, so, what were the cumulative cuts to OEA in the last budget session?
In terms of the cuts to the office, we were looking at about 17% in terms of cumulative over the past, you know, well, probably three sessions as we look at it.
Again, looking at the previous appropriation years in the capital bonding book on page 8, this request is so much higher than those previous ones were, and I wondered how that jogs with the budget cuts and so forth. I mean, how did, who was thinking what when they made their request?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, we opened up an application process for projects to submit to us by September of 2003. Mm-hmm. These projects were submitted to us, and I think one of the reasons that it does jump up is we do have a regional project which is 17 different counties. And the eligibility requirements under the rules and the statute allow 50% of the project or $2 million per county. Mm-hmm. So if we've had projects with only two counties, the maximum they would have been eligible for would be $2 million per county, or $4 million in the case of the Olmsted County project. So that's one of the reasons we haven't seen the same sizes. So even if it was a $38 million project with one county, maximum eligibility would have been $2 million.
Well, even if you, the Chairman, even if you subtract out the Redwood County one, I mean, those other proposals are still way over your recommendation for those. It's still way over the historic, the historical appropriation. You know, not understand. I know you couldn't understand what the, you couldn't know in advance what the governor was doing. But why the big jump from the historic appropriation, even subtracting that large one at the end? In other words, I guess what I'm saying is that this, we seem to have set up some false level of expectation among the counties, and if you just look at historically what is likely to what is likely to go out, and the governor is, you know, his recommendation is better than it's been for the past few years, but it's still much. How do we, in the application process, have counties have a realistic view of what they might be likely to get, or areas what they might be likely to get? Because when you put one of these applications together, gotcha, take, you know, you're looking at your costs, at your cuts, and we know that cuts also went down to local units of government and so forth, but it seems an awful lot of wasted effort goes into preparing applications that there's no chance of being funded. And I wondered if there's some way to get out
to the general public what the realistic level of funding and the realistic number of grants are likely to be.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, we work closely with projects and help them understand what the historical levels have been, as well as knowing what the needs and what they are doing. These projects, and I think one of the things I failed to mention was that this is a regional collaboration effort, but it also is a partnership amongst the state and the counties. And so sometimes, even if the requested amount isn't awarded, and a portion of it is, that still creates this partnership that helps the project in terms of acceptance by the local communities in terms of the state's commitment as well. So there is also a leverage point here. This 50% level, you can see leverages far more in terms of it, even looking at the Olmsted County project of $38 million than the entire grant amount. But it is a partnership, and I think it's that connection as well that does that. The last bonding session, unfortunately, there was some vetoes at the end, but prior to that, in terms of what the was passed, was a pretty close level to this, a little over $4 million. So it's fairly consistent with what's come out of the last time in terms of recommendation.
Zenka.
Are all of these built with direct appropriations, or are any of them built as bonded, as a capital bonding facility?
Mr. Chairman, these facilities are built with assistance from the state in terms of our bonding, but then locally, there's a couple different mechanisms that have been used. There have been bonds by the counties as well. Depending on the situation with the individual counties, some of that capitalized cost may have come from other revenue sources as well. But there's a combination of financing that goes on with each and every one of these facilities.
And continuing, is the backing for the bonding always the state part of it? Is that always the state general fund?
Mr. Chairman, that has been with this program to date.
I wondered if there's a possibility of looking at another stream of backing for the bonding, looking for the solid waste recovery fund as a backing for the bonding, so that we could look at. I mean, if one looks at these projects and you look at how they're written up, they're not only good for the environment, they're not only very long-term projects, but they're also often of economic benefit to accelerate some of them. And so I wondered if we should look at accelerating by not putting them in competition with general fund bonding projects, but by looking and seeing if there's another stream of revenue that we could look at. And I'm going to raise this question several times with other items that come before this division, because this division does have access to other streams of funding. And again, I'm not someone who believes in using bonding frivolously, but if you look at the basic components of bonding, are that they're benefits, that they're for a project that will deliver benefits over a long period of time, and also, there might be a cost-effective reason to build them, like we don't build roads a foot at a time as we accumulate money to do it. No, I think we ought to be thinking in that direction.
Okay. Just a point of clarification before we continue. There's in the budget book, it indicates that the Olmsted Waste Energy Facility is $33 million. Staff has pointed out to me that your presentation it says that it's $38 million. Can you, the difference between what you presented and the overheads versus what's in the book?
Mr. Chairman, I think as we've developed the slides, we've had more current information from the county than when we presented the information into the narrative, and I believe that reflects more current. I can double check on that in terms of the total capacity or the total operational costs and so forth of the facility, and double check on that for you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Benke, I just wanted to follow up on Representative Hoppe, I think, brought up a good point that there's private investment in this industry. Can you just give me a real rough history, like the one in Newport? It's owned privately, if I'm not mistaken. How much of it was public money invested? And then your project out in Renville County or Redwood County, is that going to have some private investment in it also?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, the facility in Newport, I don't have the exact breakdown, but I do know there has been a combination through the industry in terms of capitalization of the facility with contracts and commitments from the counties in terms of working with them. And I'm not sure exactly of what costs and how they were covered in that industry-wise, but we can try and find that back for you. In terms of the Redwood County project, there has been dialogue and discussion, looking at municipal bonds locally for funding the facility from the county. There has also been look at being provided by the industry as well. They haven't settled on that financial mechanism yet. If we were to get into a grant agreement with them for this, this is eligible only to local units of government in terms of our funding, and so it would need to be through the municipal, the counties or cities in providing those other funding. But I think in terms of the opportunity, it is out there, and they're considering which would be more beneficial to the project. The grants from the state are one component of that in making their decision.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
So the Redwood County one is not envisioned to be 100% funded by public institutions like ourselves and the counties and cities, or is that the envision?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, there are several scenarios that they've worked out, a combination of both the local and the industry involvement, strictly industry and strictly government. And I think, a lot of it depends on what they can secure from the state in terms of assistance and what the rates and terms would be for those other options. So,
one,
Mr. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the total project cost, I see $15 million for the state. What's your estimated total project cost?
Mr. Chairman, the total estimated cost, I believe, is on the slide for Redwood at $37 million.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions we have on the project? Okay. Representative Kahn, I think that I've asked Mr. Reinholz if he would work with you and maybe kind of get some of that information together, and then when the MPCA makes their presentation, we'll kind of maybe have an overview on that subject area, seeing what options may or may not be out there for us. So. Other questions that members have of OEA on their projects? Okay. I'd like to go a little bit past the project for just a second and give us a little bit of an update as to where we're at with regard to our waste management overall. The landfill space, I suspect, is running out, and I'm wondering what our timetable is now with regard to landfill, current landfill space availability.
Mr. Chairman, that is a little bit of a gear shift for us, but what we've looked at in terms of our current solid waste policy report is that there are areas of the state where I think that's more of an impact than others. Some of the municipal programs that are in place have provided for local counties. Some of the landfills there have 50, 60 years of capacity if they continue to use them as single county system. One of the impacts there is, can they afford to do that economically on some of those smaller scale systems? I think what we're looking at, though, is we've got 10 or 15 years worth of in-state capacity. The impact then comes on what is available out of state and what kind of arrangements and reliances do we have to use some of that. What we've noticed in the past is that some of that reliance on those facilities is based on current economic conditions, and in the case of Wisconsin, where they raised fees on just $3 a ton, it had an impact on how much waste was flowing there as well. So if another neighboring state were to enact fees or so forth that would negatively impact our ability to haul waste there in terms of economics, that could bring back the or increase our volumes into our own landfills and then decrease that capacity. It's, you know, it's a continual time for us to take a look at these regions and see what the needs are. We've taken a look at that in our policy report and what capacities are being looked at. What we've laid out in the capital bonding request as well as areas of the state where we think, based on the landfill capacity, that they'll be needing new capacity of some sort. What we propose is recovering the resources in terms of energy. We continue to have looked at the Southwest as an area of need. We continue to look at the Tri-County North in terms of Benton, Sherburn, and Stearns counties in need because of the capacities there, as well as the northeast part of the state. So there's a kind of a need there. There's also dependence right now on, you know, making sure that our existing other facilities, energy recovery, are maintained and in place. If we lose some of those facilities, the impact on land disposal as well increases that demand. I think we're in a position now where we can continue to plan and look and not react. But if there are impacts from neighboring states that change that, we'll probably need to do that in an expedited fashion.
Just to give members a little bit of background, years ago we used to have in place the ability to manage our waste within our state, and we kind of were able to tell the producers of the waste as to where to take the waste for disposal. That was overturned, I believe, about 94, 95. In the Supreme Court action said that that was unconstitutional, was in it or against the interstate commerce, and the therefore, because waste was a commodity, they could take it wherever they wanted to. That well, the state then lost its ability to try and manage the system at our most efficient, lowest cost activity. So now we are subject to a lot of variables that are out there, and then the landfills would fill up quite quickly, and all of a sudden the legislature will find itself in a position of trying to identify locations for new landfills. And people that went through the landfill search process, you know, years ago, will recognize very quickly, the new legislature recognized very quickly as something you don't want to be involved with, because it's just a horrendous thing. It pits everyone against everyone else. So it's a very important issue for us to pay attention to, and the reports that Mr. Benke is talking about, we'll make those reports available to you as they come to your attention, or maybe we get a chance to review some of them in the committee, that it's really something we need to be paying attention to. With regard to waste-to-energy facilities, it's my understanding that the HERC facility still is underneath statutory limitations with regard to how much can be burned there. It's never been at its 100% capacity. Can you give me an update as to what that situation is?
Mr. Chairman, there's a couple things that have changed in terms of that situation. The county did procure that facility, so it's now county-owned. I believe the statutory limitations in terms of capacity to burn are still there, and that the county is looking at, potentially if they want to move that to a higher level or not. I think you have to look at the efficiencies of their system as well, and how they've, as they've taken it over, what they think they could achieve. If you get 200 tons a day at your door and need to do something with it, I think you want to make sure that the facility, even though it was proposed at that level, is capable of using, actually being able to use that. The facility isn't brand new anymore, and I think that's an issue that, over time, you do lose a little of that capacity just in aging equipment and so forth. But I think they're looking at it. I don't know if they're proposing to ask for a change or not. We'd have to talk to them about that.
The reason for the limitation was because of emissions, I believe. But has that situation changed at all?
Mr. Chairman, overall, the waste energy facilities in the state have been improved considerably. We added, through bonding and through other programs, increased pollution control equipment that has captured additional materials, as well as some of the programs that we've talked about with the upfront removal of household hazardous waste and other recyclable materials that are recyclable but also objectionable in the process. I'm not sure in that case, you know, if that those improvements have opened up a window for increasing the capacity to the same standards or not. So I couldn't comment on that, but I could take a look at that and give you a report back.
If you would do that, because I'd like to see what I know that the facility was not burning as much as it could. That meant that the revenues that it's able to generate from tipping fees and so forth are lower than what its potential is, and I think that there's if that can be increased, then not only would it relieve pressure on the landfill, but it seems to me that that also help out with the economics of so that facility would not have to be as publicly subsidized in the future as it may be currently subsidized. So if you get those figures to us as to what the subsidization is right now and how that's impacted.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, while we're looking at that facility, there are two other things. I know when it was first built, there was some strong controls on monitoring emissions and monitoring, and I think we've eased up on those a little bit, but I'd like to know what the monitoring proposals are on that. And if you say facilities change as they go older, maybe if we release some, we ought to reinstate them, if that's a possible problem. Then the other thing, as I recall, and can't quite remember the detail, that was built to be, I don't know if it was built to be a cogeneration facility or also to supply steam heat to the city, and I think it's never done that. And, you know, it may have done one and not the other or something like that. But I'd like to know what, again, if we're looking at changes, even if we're looking at easing up on requirements for it, what we be looking in terms of either requiring cogeneration or steam heat distribution from that facility.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, we have with us today Trudy Richter with the Minnesota Resource Recovery Association, and I think she could probably provide us with some of those answers right now, if that would be okay, Mr. Chair.
That'd be great.
Mr. Chairman, Representatives, Trudy Richter with Minnesota Resource Recovery Association. The HERC facility currently has a permit limit of 365,000 tons a year, or 1,000 tons a day approximately. It does have the technical capacity to add 40,000 to 42,000 additional tons of throughput. This throughput was engineering reviewed about 3 years ago by the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board. That is available. I don't think it is degraded in any sense. The restrictions were statutory in part. That statute was changed last year. It is now a local city restriction, City of Minneapolis, on the facility. As it relates...
Throughput restriction. Restriction on emissions or restriction?
No, on the throughput. They wanted to limit the throughput. The city, because of its... location in downtown Minneapolis. That was from the very commencement of the project, Representative Kahn. I do want to assure everybody there has been no relaxation of regulation on that facility nor any of the facilities around the state. In fact, since most of these facilities were built in the late 80s, we have faced two or three rule changes making the pollution control equipment more stringent on these facilities, to the extent that this industry has some of the cleanest emissions of any industry out there in the United States right now. And in specifically in the downtown Minneapolis, HERC, Hennepin County now owns a facility, they have lived up to and continue to live up to the strictest regulations related to mercury, related to heavy metals, acid gases, and others. So even though these facilities may get older, they need to be maintained to the extent that they can continue to meet these very tight restrictions. Then as it relates to cogeneration, which I believe was the last question, that facility does have the capability of producing both electricity and steam. The economics for that project were very favorable originally for electricity. It receives the highest electrical payment for its kilowatts of any of the facilities in the state. They get 5 cents per kilowatt. And we need those revenues to offset the higher cost of operating these facilities as it compares to a landfill that doesn't have this equivalent level of technology or pollution control. So over the years, they have produced the electricity. However, they do have the capability of producing steam, and it was often contemplated that it could be a part of a district heating system in downtown Minneapolis if the economics prove themselves. I know in the last year there have been discussions to send the steam line over to MTC, one of their bus garages. It's a nice fit. It's very close to the facility, and those plans are still in negotiations. They could continue to do both, in other words. And I believe that was all the questions. If not, I'd be happy to answer any others.
Chairman, my question about the emissions was not on changing the requirements for equipment and so forth. I do believe we eased up on the monitoring requirements. And so either the frequency of monitoring or what is the monitoring? I don't remember exactly what it was, but that was the question. Is that being
kept? Right. Mr. Chairman? Representative Kahn, you are correct. Initially, we were very and continue to be very concerned about any mercury emissions. And early on, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency had put some additional testing requirements on HERC to be sure that its mercury emissions were very, very low.
Actually, I think it was by statute
number. Right. Thank you. In any event, the commissioner could modify those. The frequency of the testing, which over time was done because they proved to have such very low, nationally it's been highlighted as one of the lowest facilities in the nation. So that was a relief from that. That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Benke, if you could, I'd like, wondering if you would talk with the City of Minneapolis and find out what their current concerns are with regard to restrictions that they have on the facility. Because it, as we are looking at trying to manage waste and keep it out of landfills, it seems to me that the city that doesn't have any other alternatives with really the mass disposal of their waste to then restrict it, their potential capabilities and forcing it to go to a landfill which has limited capacities is something we need to take a look at now and see if we can come up with some better way of handling that. We certainly want to take into account their concerns, but we have other concerns that we want them to take into account, too. Representative Pennis.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the question was brought up by you, or the thought on other states surrounding us raising air fees and consequently we getting our state getting more solid waste. And what regulations are there on Minnesota then raising their fee in response to that?
Mr. Benke, why don't you take that one?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not sure that, you know, in response to raising our fees, I think that's kind of one of the things that we look at in terms of the only thing that we can't do is raise it in a way that interferes with interstate commerce, and that is, if a neighboring state wants to raise its fees, they can't do it in a way that it's only to Minnesota garbage or only to a certain, you know, out-of-state input. And that would be, they'd have to do it across the board, and that's what they did over in Wisconsin was they raised it, everyone pays that fee. Unfortunately, some of the use of that fee comes back to only Wisconsin programs, but that's, you know, part of, I think, you know, their revenue-raising stream. In terms of our response, you know, if if the fees are higher, I think in other states, more, you know, closely matching, you know, disposal in our state or at the levels that we're at. In one way, it's a good thing in terms of if the waste stays where it was kind of planned to. It's a bad thing if you were counting on that for long-term disposal and don't have an alternative for that. And I think those are the areas that are relying on that capacity that we want to watch most closely. Interestingly, when we did meet as state groups, we did put in, you know, place here in the state and through the counties ways to keep a lot more of the waste here in the metro area. And when we talked to the state of Iowa, who had a disposal fee and a charge, they were a little bit upset because their revenue stream had kind of dried up to the tune of quite a bit. So, you know, that's the other impact, is that as we're relying on things and attaching fees to it, will it continue or not? So it's a complicated mix there, but I think that's, there aren't really restrictions as long as we don't interfere with interstate commerce.
When we get into waste management and into, especially into the fees area, you're really into garbage. I'll tell you, it's tough. It's tough to follow, and it's we tried for years. The philosophy was to try and keep Minnesota's waste in Minnesota. That way, we were managing it, but we were also responsible for the liabilities that our waste was causing. In other words, groundwater contamination, and so forth. Now, with our waste going to other states, there's potential. But even though our landfills and things are designed with contingency fees and so forth to provide for future cleanup in case there's a problem, that may or may not be the case in some situations where waste could be going to out of state, and then we end up with our businesses and potentially the state being liable for contamination in other states. So there was a strategy behind it, but interstate commerce blew that all apart, and so now we're kind of up for grabs.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, our liability then goes with the garbage?
Mr. Benke?
Mr. Chairman, that's the understanding. Anytime you dispose of a waste, it doesn't matter if it's gone across the line. If the responsibility can come back to the generator.
Okay. Representative Kahn.
Chairman, we may also be interested in that court decision if at any point people start wanting to look at trans-state shipment of nuclear waste, because by our setting up the Prairie Island repository, we might have a similar court decision that says that we have to accept nuclear waste from other states at that. So that was one of the considerations that some of us who were not real enthusiastic about that were considering at the time.
Are there
it
other
hasn't happened yet, but you know that goes on the I Told You So website. Oh, you'll know of it. It doesn't move very secretly.
Not at all.
Well, thank you very much for your attention on this issue. It is one that gets fairly complex, but you'll find it quite interesting. And I think at some point I'd like to try and get us a little more background on some of the other options that are happening out there with regard to how we're handling our waste. We've covered a couple today with regard to some of the just. Identifying that landfilling is there, talking about waste to energy facilities, but there are some new technologies or newer ones with the rapid digesting type of landfilling process and so forth. So I'd like to revisit this for more of an educational standpoint, so you can see what the options are out there as we're looking at trying to invest in some to help us handle our waste concerns long term. Definitely has significant economic impact on the state of Minnesota. If we can't handle our waste, people find it, and the costs go up on disposal, that really can hold down on productivity of actions and activities in Minnesota. Any other issues before anything else, Mr. Benson?
Well, I'd just like to thank you, and anytime you want me to come back and talk trash, we'd be happy to.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Members, we are adjourned.